Loading. As Emma said, thank you guys all so much for sticking around. It really shows how committed you guys are to being at this conference and learning about how we can engage local people and local solutions, right? And I think the first two presentations really did a great job of setting the stage. I don't know how we're going to follow, but bear with me as we work through this. So we are going to be talking about the active design guidelines in New York City and how they can be used as community engagement strategies. And though we'll be talking specifically about the work we're doing in New York, we do encourage you to try to take some of the lessons that we've learned with you into your communities, because I think a lot of it is transferable. We do not have any financial relationships to disclose. So wanted to start out with a little bit, I'm trying to simplify this, about who we are and what our structure is, because our community transformation grant doesn't look the same as it does in other parts of the country. But the CDC did award the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene a community transformation grant to work on chronic disease prevention at a community level. And so their response was to build a new not-for-profit organization called the Partnership for a Healthier New York City. And the Partnership for a Healthier New York City, their central staff then selected one organization from each of the five boroughs because of their track record in working on community-level prevention strategies to build coalitions across the borough of diverse stakeholders, so community-based organizations, faith-based organizations, government entities, for-profit entities, housing providers. The list is exhaustive. And these are the organizations that were selected. So Emma here is from the Institute for Family Health, Bronx Health Reach, leading the Partnership for a Healthier Bronx, and I'm here representing the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, Partnership for a Healthier Manhattan. Our overarching partnership objectives are in the three leading causes of preventive death or disability, so really tobacco-free living being number one, number two being active living and healthy eating together, and third being alcohol. But today's presentation is really going to focus on active living and how we can increase opportunities for physical activity among residents by looking at our built environment and making those opportunities safe, appealing, and accessible. Those three core principles really, really matter. A lot of you have probably seen slides like this before, maps like this before. It's nothing new. We know that place matters in health. And you'll see that I'm going to be focusing on Manhattan and Emma's going to be focusing on the Bronx, but where those deep, deep reds are the areas that we're really concentrating a lot of our efforts. I'll be discussing some work we've been doing in East Harlem, and Emma will be talking about the South Bronx, where the rates of the obesity epidemic are really highly concentrated. Our work is really grounded in the active design guidelines for increasing opportunities for physical activity, and these guidelines came about a couple of years ago by the Departments of Design and Construction, Departments of Health, Departments of Transportation, working with urban planners and architects to really say, what can we do to our space to make the healthy choice, as we heard in the first presentation, the easy choice? How do you make it a default? So in essence, if people can't go to the gym, how do we make it so that they're using the stairs, right? And so this was developed a few years back, and the audience really was for those people who kind of created it, the urban planners, the architects. And as we've seen, people are the experts on their own spaces, and people are the experts of their own lives. And so what's happened has been this sort of adaptation of these active design guidelines to say, let's engage communities in this work. Let's ask communities what they want to see done to their space, how they can transform their space, and equip them with the skills and resources that they need to be able to make those changes possible. And so we're happy to say that a couple of supplements have come out of the active design guidelines, including one for affordable housing and one for community groups. And please, please, please go to the centerforactivedesign.org to download. I do have one copy of the active design guidelines for community groups with me today if anybody's interested in just looking at it really briefly. But they are free and available for download. So when we talk about active design, there's really four basic concepts that it gets drilled down to. The first being active transportation, which as you can imagine means, what do our bike lanes look like? Do we have bike racks? Are we promoting this kind of lifestyle? Active recreation, so everything from joint use agreements to what's going on with our playgrounds? How come half of them don't have anything in them? Active buildings, so do we have stair prompts? Are we encouraging people to use the stairs? Or are the stairs hidden, and so we just default to the elevators or the escalators? And then healthy eating, which ranges from everything to community gardens to do we have green carts? So I'm going to talk really briefly about the work we've been doing in Manhattan to focus on active design with school stakeholders. So why the schools? From day one, we knew it was important to, if we're talking about physical activity, engage the community in the dialogue, and a couple of different priorities came up. Public housing came up, especially around stair use and safety in the stairs, across ages and across demographics. How do we make physical activity fun and easy? But the recurrent trend that we heard time and time again, because our schools are not meeting physical activity or physical education mandates, is what is happening to our students in the schools. And so we were really lucky to start a partnership with Innovation High School, which is a high school in East Harlem working with at-risk students and really engaging them in a project-based learning model. The project-based learning model was wonderful because it opened up all sorts of doors for collaboration. And so in one-on-one meetings, we started to discover intersections of interest. And although their director of community engagement, who was our prime contact there, was looking at things from an education perspective and a youth development perspective, and we were talking about it through a public health perspective, there were so many intersections and so many ways that we saw we could collaborate. So we invited them to an active design workshop in which they got to sort of join together with other stakeholders in the community and think about their space, really say, this is what I want to do with my space. And it yielded a vision to do something. They had a group of 15 students who had gone to Mississippi, who had learned about community mobilization, who had learned about community advocacy, and what they came back with was this urgency to actually do something and make their mark on their communities, which was great. They had gone to seminars. They were tired of just learning. It was time for some action. So we did that same workshop that we did with the school and with the other community stakeholders with the students, and we introduced them to what active design from a health perspective looked like. What does diabetes look like in your community? And they noticed, you know, they were identifying a lot with the different health causes because that was what they see in their community. It is obvious, it is apparent, it is in their families. And so they did this needs assessment where they looked around their school and they said, these are the strategies we want to work with. So all of this came from the students. They said, we're not drinking the water from the water fountains. Why not? The water fountains look disgusting. The water is warm. Why would we drink that? They noticed that their stairs, because they were caged, sort of gave a prison-like feel. How do we make the stairwell experience more welcoming? And then they also said, we can't play basketball in the fall because it gets dark early and there's no light. And also, our fences need some work. So they've done everything from conceptualizing the design to implementation to expressing a need to evaluate their work. They've really been hands-on. You can see them painting in their stairwell, and you can see that cage that I was talking about, so they added some color to that. And they learned what it meant to work with the leaders and stakeholders of the school to get the permission that they needed to do it. This is just a quick look at what some of the water fountain work hasn't been implemented fully yet, but this is the prompt that is going to be going by the water fountain, and we started with a pretest where the students echoed what that core group of students said. We're not using the water fountains, and they're right. This is why. And I'm really excited to say that the school management team, as a result of this, has decided to get a whole new filtration system so that the students are going to get cold water. And then we ask them, what about this process? You know, we talk about wanting to engage communities as agents of change, and we want to know that they actually see themselves as agents of change. So we did some focus groups, and this is what they said. They really enjoyed the process. They said, we were really all working together. It was for us, by us. And so they talked about this idea of giving back to their community and what really brought it together. I will say that there were some frustrations when other people came in. The team transitions and ownerships, they said, you know, they wanted to take the credit. They weren't as motivated. And just one last point about this. Active design really has the potential to be a violence prevention strategy, too. The research still needs to be done on this, but the students really saw it as a unifying force. For us, by us, we need more youth to do this work. And I will just end on this before handing it over to Emma, that this was a pilot project, but it's yielding bigger results. We are now working with the entire district leadership team in one of the school districts on the Lower East Side, where they're working to look at how they can use active design system-wide in all of their schools.
So, So as Devin talked about schools, I'm going to talk about our work in the Bronx working with affordable housing providers. I will go through this briefly or quickly. So why housing groups? We met a number of housing providers through different strategies, different outreach strategies. One thing we did was we had an active design workshop in the Bronx where we invited community members and stakeholders throughout the entire borough to learn about, you know, what are the key issues, what are the good things that are happening in the borough. A number of housing groups RSVP'd and were interested and wanting to partner with us. The other thing was that we've, again, have a coalition of over 70 partners, and some of our longstanding coalition members are housing groups in the South Bronx. So again, you know, when we were thinking about what type of work we wanted to do around active design, you know, we had some key partners that were interested, but we also did a lot of outreach just to learn what's happening in the borough. In the end, this last year, we decided to work with two housing groups in the South Bronx. The first group is called Women's Housing and Economic Development Corporation. They are, again, one of our longstanding coalition members, as well as a very key partner of the health department on active design. So they were really, you know, huge leaders in the field in this area. They had the capacity to do the work. And most interestingly, they were building a huge new building in Melrose in the South Bronx. The second group was Bronx Pro Real Estate Group, again, an affordable housing group who had done some work around active design and, again, was building a new affordable housing site in the community of Melrose. So these two groups did not know each other, but they were creating these great new buildings and were very interested in doing community development work. So it was an amazing opportunity to bring them to the table together to talk about how could we collaboratively, you know, make this community healthier. So just to give you a sense of the type of work that these groups do and why we were so excited to work with them, Intervale Green was one of Wedco's previous buildings. This is what the neighborhood looked like before, and this is their new building. There's rooftop gardens. They have nutrition education in the building. They created a business improvement district. They're now looking at the subways and how to improve light and, you know, clean up litter in the neighborhood. So again, you know, they really take a 360 approach to their buildings and community. Bronx Pro recently just completed a beautiful new park. This is before and this is after. It was just completed last month. They actually sent a group of students to Barcelona to look at Parque Güell, if you notice. So there are a lot of things that are similar, Barcelona and the South Bronx, which is great. So as I mentioned, both of these housing groups had new buildings in Melrose. And to give you a little background about this community, Melrose is in the South Bronx. We are the poorest congressional district in the country. We are the hungriest and the most obese. We lack transportation. What's interesting, there's actually one of the major commuter rails called Metro North that runs through this neighborhood, but no one can afford it. So even though there's this lovely train line, no one can take it, and it's really an eyesore overall. Some good things that are in the neighborhood. Number one, Boricua College is a wonderful college that has, you know, it's a center of activity. And second, this area has actually been rezoned. So historically, you saw a lot of car repair shops and sort of other industrial type, you know, looking things. But right now, you see every week new buildings popping up, you know, residential buildings, and this great interest in the community to do something, you know, to provide healthier food and other things. 5 minutes. Okay. So over the last year, we've worked with these two housing groups to come up with a plan. How can we promote wellness and health in this community? We first met back in February, you know, just to sit down and introduce everyone and talk about, you know, what are our experiences, what do we hope to get out of this process, how are we going to engage the community, which really is, you know, at the center of all of our work. All three of us believe, you know, this is an extremely part of the process. The community has to be involved from day one on the leadership team, et cetera. So starting in March, we started planning for a needs assessment. Again, Bronx Pro had a little bit of experience in Melrose, but Wedco and Bronx Health Reach really did not. So we thought we needed to do a very thorough needs assessment, doing key stakeholder meetings with organizations, holding community forums and active design workshops, and finally doing some broader surveying. Then the idea is that starting in January of this year, we'll start implementing 3 to 5 small and large projects in the neighborhood, and then we'll do evaluation. So just to get a little more in-depth into some of the work we've done so far, again, we've had this summer we had 10 key stakeholder meetings with organizations from all different sectors, whether it be sort of city government agencies to youth organizations to violence prevention groups, to really understand what are the big issues in this neighborhood, what are the things that we should pay attention to, who are the key community members that we need to meet with who have to be part of that leadership team. Some of them were existing partners that we knew, and others were brand new. Below is a list of some of the themes that came up in these meetings. Crime and safety came up in almost every meeting, for sure. Health, the topics were really more around food and green space, less about access to healthcare, which we thought was interesting, and reentry programs were very, very important. Then in the end of September and early October, we had three community meetings where we had really mini active design workshops. We asked people, again, what is their ideal community? What are the major issues and opportunities around these different areas? And see, these are some of the major concerns, and this is what people wanted. But again, the issues of violence came up a lot, and indoor recreation space. Also, kids aging out of after-school programs was a major problem. So again, we just gave you a brief overview of some of the work that we're doing in New York City. Here's a list of some best practices. Some best practices that we wanted to highlight. The first thing is finding a champion. I think Devin's work is a great example of that. She has been working with a teacher who has a background in urban planning, who is extremely passionate about working with youth and working in the community. And so if you find that champion in your work, obviously it's going to be much easier to do. The second thing is meeting people where they're at. Especially with community members, you have to find a way to build your work into their existing life. So whether it be, existing meetings or events or things like that, it's hard to get people out. And if you meet people where they're at and what they're interested in, it's much better. I also wanted to highlight, always say thank you. I think we forget this sometimes, but especially with community members and your partners who don't have any more funding than you do, it's important to say thank you. Some of the challenges, again, staff changes is a big, really big issue. Bronx Pro, what I mentioned earlier, they were full steam ahead, so excited to work on this project, and in June, the key staff member decided to go to the private sector. Awesome. So she left the organization, and while they're still part of the work that we do, their level of involvement is not as great. And finally, I'd say building trust, again, is a really big thing. We have funders who say, within this time period, you have to get X amount of work done. But the reality is, especially when you're doing community work, it takes many years to build trust and for people to realize and want to be part of the work that you're doing. So next steps, as a city, the Partnership for Healthier New York City is developing an active design guidelines for schools. So we are really excited about this project, and stay tuned for that. And we just wanted to say thank you to the CDC for making the work possible, the Health Department, the Partnership for Health in New York City, and again, all of our coalition members. And here's our contact information. Thank you.